In Scotland, when friends get together, they blether. When these three friends happen to be Scottish Blue Badge tourist guides, you can be sure that the country that they're so passionate about will be right at the heart of their discussions. Be it contemporary or historical, culinary or cultural, reminiscence or anecdote, from accommodation to zoos, the chat will range right across the entire alphabet of topics and issues that are live and happening in Scotland right now. We hope that you'll join us. There's nothing to beat a richt good blether.
And you could also join in our blethers on social media. You can find us as at Scottish Blethers on both Facebook and Instagram. We post additional content during the week that supports the podcast episode.
We love making the podcast and would love it if you could share them with your friends and leave a review on the platform of your choice.
Hello and welcome to a new series of Scottish Blethers. I'm Liz Lister.
And I'm Helen Houston.
And I've forgotten how to do this, Helen.
Such a time, Liz, since we do. But the time has been well spent and it kind of links into what we're going to be talking about today.
It does. I mean, we have both been working hard on the day job, I suppose, particularly yes. You. You're just the Duracell bunny that never stops.
Oh. Well, it's something I love doing, so that's part of it, isn't it?
It is. But literally, we have not been together for a blether, never mind a recorded blether. For months, we have been on the road, we've been going up and down Scotland, and we've been enjoying tourism in Scotland.
Yes, which is what we're going to talk about today, Liz.
Yeah, very relevant, and particularly relevant because there was a report that came out this week on tourism in 2023 in Scotland, and it's all good news. And I can't find it. It was on the news, but I think it's going to probably officially be launched at a big event at the end of October. But it's all good news as far as tourism's concerned.
Yes, and I think Liz, we've noticed that as we've been travelling around Scotland. It has been very upbeat and very, very busy, but very upbeat and great.
Yes, the buzz is back again after the events of COVID and then the gradual build back up again. I think we can say that we have now made a full recovery. But before we start on that, let's go back and just think, why do tourists come to Scotland?
Oh, yes. And I mean, we just need to almost look out of our own windows, Liz, and just see that sort of the breathtaking scenery that we see and the culture that's all about us.
Yeah, so I think that's right. I mean, I know that we're getting more and more built up across Scotland, particularly in the cities, obviously, but we still have absolutely stunning scenery. And the word is out there and people come to get to see these beautiful, iconic landscapes that we have. But as you say, Helen, it's becoming much more than that. People are going back to their roots, ancestries, coming to find their families, their lost roots, but also more and more looking for experiences.
Yes, and I think that's a big thing now, isn't it? It's no longer just come and take a photograph, look and take a photograph. It's how can we experience, how can we let this visit to Scotland sink into our souls and really feel it? And that's done through all the various cultural things that they can see and just gather around about them.
Yeah, from historical heritage to cultural heritage, we've got it all. And I think nowadays, you know, particularly after the COVID pandemic, people are looking to escape and they've also got very high expectations. I mean, I know my daughter recently, you know, it's not a hen night now. It's, you know, they go for the weekend and it's not, you know, going down the pub. It's looking to hire a luxury lodge with its spa and its hot tub and all the rest of it. So people are looking to get away from it all, a bit of luxury.
Yes, and something that, you know, it's almost a once-in-a-lifetime experience. So even if people are big travellers and can do a lot of things, that what each event or each time they go abroad, whether it's to Scotland or elsewhere, they're looking for an experience, not just a nice hotel.
Yep, and often that experience might be something to do with wildlife, nature. So we've got all of that. You know, if you think of the rich biodiversity that we have in Scotland, that's a major draw as well. So when you come to look at where tourists actually visit in Scotland, it's not surprising that the Highlands and Skye are the most visited area.
Yes, and then following on from that, we've got kind of Glasgow and the Clyde Valley. Well, that's kind of almost a local thing because we've always gone over that way to, we used to go to holidays on Prestwick, to Ayr, go down the water, down the River Clyde on a boat, just, and again, just breathtaking scenery.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that when we talk about tourism, we tend to think of tourists coming from abroad. But of course, that's not the major source of income for the tourist industry in Scotland. It's from locally domiciled and from the rest of the UK. So that's a huge part of it. And then we've got other sectors of the tourism industry, like the conference tourism. You know, lots of people, particularly Glasgow, becoming a major conference venue. So people come for conferences, for business in general. So lots of segments make up the tourism industry.
Yes, because usually when people are coming over for a conference, they will extend not just from the day sitting listening to speakers, but also to say, well, extending it by a couple of days, or they do corporate events out from the conference so that people don't just feel they've come to look at four walls. They're seeing where they are. And of course, travelling makes people understand other countries.
Yeah, understanding the culture. So when they come for the conferences, they're perhaps focused on the cities like Edinburgh and Glasgow. And of course, overseas tourists flock there as well. But they tend to be shorter visits there, maybe overnight stays, couple of nights, two or three nights to see the sights in the cities and then move out. And of course, out in the countryside, we've got all the major attractions that are associated with Scotland, like the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, yes, and that is still such a draw.
Everybody,
even people coming on sort of extended tours in Scotland, just have to go to the Loch Ness Monster. And if the Loch Ness is not on their tour, they will take a short day trip out of Edinburgh to see the monster, which of course exists.
It never ceases to amaze me because you think of it as something, you know, that Scottish kids are brought up on, you know, stay away from the water or the water beast will come and get you. But when you're with tourists that have come from all over the world and you're sitting on the ship cruising up Loch Ness and they say, you know, this is an experience of a lifetime. I learned about this in kindergarten. And you think, you know, this story has spread across the world.
And of course, nowadays, Liz, with all these clever people with technology, quite a number of them take a picture of themselves, you know, with Loch Ness in the background, and they'll go home and Photoshop in the monster, just in case they haven't quite grasped, got the monster on film.
That's true. But it's still a major attraction, as the other two major attractions, Whiskey. Many people coming to go on the Whiskey tour up in Speyside or all over Scotland, and golf.
Yes, golf is still, I was with two people in St Andrews yesterday who were over just, you know, they'd played a game of golf. They hadn't got on the old course, but it didn't really matter to them. They'd played golf in St Andrews.
Yep, so lots of draws. And one of our other major draws is that our coastline, you know, Scotland very much associated with water. We've got over 11,000 miles of coastline, 137 miles of canals, 31,460 freshwater locks. There's a lot of water, as there has been, very topical, as there has been over the last couple of weeks, where, you know, Scotland has just been deluged.
Oh yes, it has. There's been a lot of water, but it doesn't always rain. We have to say that. But even when the rain was coming down, it was something spectacular. But we do get sunshine. In fact, today's not too bad here. It's dry, so we're fine.
We've got to remember that without the rain, we wouldn't have the beautiful scenery and we wouldn't have the whiskey.
That's right. First stage of whiskey is the rain.
Absolutely. So 38% of our international visitors visit a beach. And I think it would be even higher for our domestic. It's just so, you know, the coastline and the lochs, such an important part of the natural landscape.
Yeah. And of course, we forgot about the beaches. You know, once people realised sunshine could be really warm and budget flights to Spain came on board in the 1960s, the people of Scotland forgot about their own natural, beautiful beaches. But they're coming back, so much so that they've had lifeguards on the beaches because of the numbers of people. But the numbers are nothing like you see in the postcards from elsewhere. You can still get a large section of beach all to yourself.
Yeah, no, you think, when you think of beaches in Scotland, you think of Luskentyre and Horgebost.
Yes.
You know, all of the beaches, but, you know, our whole, you know, you're never more than 50 miles from the coast. So, you know, lots of beautiful beaches. And then we've got all the global events that Scotland is famous for, not just the golf championships, but we held this year, big event in Scotland was the UCI World Cycling Championship, an inaugural event, huge success.
That was amazing. And it sort of said held in Glasgow, but actually an awful lot of Scotland was involved in it. I was up in Fort William at the time. They had the mountain biking coming down the Nevis, from Glen Nevis. It was absolutely stunning. And of course, they had a bit of rain then too, but only added to the excitement of the event. But hot on the heels of that cycling, literally hot on the heels, was the World Piping Championships, bagpiping championships. I mean, it just went from one to the other.
Yep, so lots and lots of events that are important on a global stage. So everything was looking rosy in the Garden of Tourism in Scotland. And we were growing the contribution to the economy year on year. And then, of course, beginning of 2020, everything began to unravel. At the beginning of that year, a group of agencies had predicted that by 2030, Scotland would be a leader in 21st century tourism. You know, they were so optimistic. In the foreword of that report, the First Minister at the time, Nicola Sturgeon, she spoke of a sector that would enrich lives, protect places, and help deliver Scotland's wider economic strategy.
Yes, yeah, so and then, as you say, everything just closed down. COVID struck. But one of the sides of COVID, and it was just seeing some of the photographs that people were able to take of places with nobody in them. So you're beginning to see the detail, which then we can add into our, now tourism is back, we can add that detail into showing our tourists some of the detail that had been missed prior to COVID.
Such as
the detail on buildings and things, or the buildings that exist, that we're so busy focused on, marching up the Royal Mile to Edinburgh Castle, that we miss an awful lot of the tiny little details in and out of the closes. Mm-hmm. That when there was nobody there, some of the guides in Edinburgh were actually going in and discovering, plaques on walls that they'd missed, Patrick Geddes' plaque and various things, just that you'd missed. So now when you're doing a Royal Mile tour, you can put in a lot of things that were rediscovered during the COVID lockdown when local people were able to go out and about, but other people could not.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I mean, you're having to focus on your own area and finding places that you didn't know existed. And also, the big thing to come out of COVID, although it decimated the Scottish economy because tourism is such an important part of it, the one thing that came out of it is that once we were able to get out of lockdown, staycations became the thing to do.
Yes, I'm smiling because it was during the time of staycations, Liz, that my heart went out to the Spanish people. But they had the Brits vacationing on their shores for about 40, 50 years. And my heart went out to them when I saw just how Brits can behave when on holiday.
Yeah, one of the challenges we'll come back to for the future. Yeah. But it did prop up and begin to get the embers glowing again of the Scottish. It was a lifeline, I suppose, when we didn't have international tourists coming in, but domestic tourists certainly don't spend as much. So it was just the beginning. And then even when we began to get a proper recovery, when the top line figure looked as if it was getting better, that wasn't really the bottom line, because of course the prices had gone up, fuel, energy, food, all of those were inflated. And so it was a really, really tough time for companies working in the tourism sector to actually try and get back to 2019 figures.
And of course, it all coincided with the reality of Brexit, and many people who had been working in the tourism industry from Europe were no longer there.
That's right, yeah. very difficult to recruit staff and to retain them once you do get them. Well, we've seen that as we've been travelling around even this summer. You know, it continues to be an ongoing issue. So coming out of COVID, the Scottish Government commissioned the relevant agencies in Scotland to develop a five-year recovery plan that they could invest in and take the opportunity to reflect. You know, things couldn't be the same as they were, the dirty tourism that you've been talking about there. We needed to be sustainable. We needed to be green. We needed to have principles and policies that we were going to build our tourism on. And so they asked the relevant public sector agencies to come together to produce a report on Scotland's tourism industry. So when we think about our important agencies, the one that's right up there that everybody thinks of, Visit Scotland.
Yes, they certainly have got the headlines, haven't they? And I think they do a very good job of just kind of promoting Scotland and showing what we have. And some of the things that, and they're not just promoting Scotland in a kind of a small sort of environment. They're trying to do it globally and showing how we can compare with, or what we have that stands up against what other countries have. You know, the big hitters that people know and around the world know about. We've got some big hitters too, and they Visit Scotland are doing very well in promoting that.
They are. I mean, they do have a huge budget. It's over £45 million. But the aim is to get us on those dream lists, you know, to get us featured in the Sunday supplements, to get us really established as a global attraction. That's the big aim for it. But it's more than that. They're trying to, first of all, disperse tourism in Scotland, get it away from the fairy pools on Skye and Loch Ness and all of those that are the sort of first go-to places, and try to get it spread out so that it's bringing income to the economies of smaller, more rural areas. But not just that, it's not just all about the summertime. So if you look at Visit Scotland's website, it's all about things to see and do and destinations to visit, but particularly ideas for off-season travel. So at the moment, they've got big ideas around Halloween, Guy Fawkes Night, autumn. They're trying to make Scotland a destination all year round.
Yes, and what we've noticed this year is that our season has extended. I mean, we've still got tours going on into October, whereas when I first started guiding, September was the end of the thing, but we're now into October, going towards the end of October. So, yes, these things. And I was looking at some other places that do tours, extended tours in the wintertime, and they are really cashing in on things, as you say, Halloween, the Christmas festivals that we have in Edinburgh. That's a huge tourism draw.
The festivals throughout the year, I mean, that's another of these cultural experiences. So everybody's catching on to this, and come back with a few examples of that later. But what I particularly like, I mean, the idea of promoting tourism is now very professional. It's all about marketing, whatever, but also what you would call a segmentation model. And when you read through it, it is, you know, exactly, you know, there's five different categories of tourists that the Visit Scotland are setting out to target. First one, the adventure seekers. You've been talking about them, looking for their active holidays. They want to try out new things, push their limits, energise themselves. So just like you and I, Helen, I think we've come down as the adventure seekers. We want holidays off the beaten track.
Yeah, and you can see that. You just need to go up into Cairngorm, which developed itself in the 60s as a ski resort and now is 12 months in the year. They're making it work throughout the 12 months. So even if the snow is disappearing, they've still got lots of things happening. The cycle event, that downhill at the Nevis Range, for example, that is a world track. Brilliant.
Exactly. And these adventure seekers are typically energetic, sociable, career-minded individuals. That's definitely us. That's definitely. But then there's also...
Did you not tell me that you'd done bungee jumping off the Garry Bridge at one time, Liz?
Not me. Somebody else there, Helen. Not me. I've got more sense than that. Never done a bungee. No. No, I don't think I ever will. But then there's the curious travellers. Travellers who like to live life to the full and enjoy travelling as a hobby, that's definitely us as well. An overwhelming desire to explore new destinations and discover new things. A love of travelling may have come from experiences in their youth. There you are, that's you, Helen.
Yes, that's right. And of course, the curious travellers, they are usually well researched when they come. you know, when they go travelling, they know what they want to see. They've read about it. They've got a bit of background and they want to see it up close and personal.
Yeah, and I think that that kind of epitomises the type of traveller that we take on the Rick Steves tours.
Yes.
Because they want to broaden their minds and educate themselves. It's not just about ticking off sites. They want to understand the culture. So I think the curious travellers, definitely, there's a significant number of them amongst the Rick Steves groups. And Then you have engaged sightseers, the people who want to enjoy sightseeing, taking in all the historical places, the scenery and nature. But importantly, they want to get to know the locals. They want to understand and have authentic experiences. So engage sightseers there. And then you've got the food-loving culturalists.
Oh, yes. The food-loving ones. I had a lovely couple on one of my tours, and they were food lovers. And they'd done so much research in advance that they discovered amazing restaurants in places like Oban or Inverness that I'd not known about, but they had found them online and booked their experience or food loving experience in them, and they were wonderful.
And of course, that's a booming sector of the tourism in Scotland, all the sort of homestays on farms, cheese makers, whiskey tasting. People are really beginning to have little cottage industries based around food and the story of the food, which is what people are so interested in these days.
Yes, and of course, that's part of the diversity of farming as well, that they've brought the food from the field to the plate just on their own premises in many, many cases.
Yep, and you've got all the food markets and, you know, if you think of, you know, for example, somebody visiting St Andrews, they wouldn't come to St Andrews without trying either an ice cream from Ginetta's Gelateria or a fudge donut from Fisher and Donaldson.
Absolutely. Well, I was there yesterday and didn't get my ice cream. I'll have to go back on a special trip for my ice cream. That's my wee pilgrimage.
Did you have your fudge donut?
No, I decided that, you know, I usually go in and order, you know, 12 or 15 fudge donuts, and going for one felt a little bit down market. So I shall maybe wait till I've got a few people with me and I'll go for fudge donuts.
I think we should explain that you don't actually eat 12 or 15 on your own.
No.
You do cut them up to give to your tour members.
Give to the tour members, and they just wallow in them. They love them.
Anyone going to St Andrews must try them.
Yes. And then
the ice cream. And finally, then we've got the natural advocates, the people who want to connect with nature, get away from it all, the people who want to take the little cottage somewhere on a remote, uninhabited island out on the west coast of Scotland. They want to unwind and recharge, just enjoy quiet time, maybe with the family, maybe on their own. But certainly these kind of people don't follow the crowds.
No, and they just, as you say, just lie there, and they have wonderful experience because in the silence and in the quietness out on the islands, they might see a golden eagle flying over, or they'll see, you know, seals or an orca in the water. It's just amazing.
Yeah, puffins, you know, certainly
at the right time. Yes,
certainly that's a large part of the attraction of Scotland, for these experiences that you can have, the aurora borealis, the Merry Dancers, as they're called in Scotland. You know, all these natural experiences are an important part of what draws people here. And then we've talked about Visit Scotland, but another important agency is the Scottish Tourism Alliance, because that brings everybody together. Don't know if you saw recently, but there's been a survey. It closes within a matter of days, but it includes tour guides being asked, you know, what has been your experience this year? And they draw all that information together, produce a report, and I think that's the one that's going to be released on the 31st of October when they hold their annual conference.
Yes, and I think that's good. And it's good that they actually brought all that information together, so they're getting a much more rounded picture of what has gone on the ground.
And that rounded picture is very much about tourism booming. It's far exceeding the pre-COVID levels in 2019. Our spending from tourists coming in is up. The number of overnight visits from people outside the UK has increased, although the number actually from England has decreased. I don't know if there's a message there to us, but certainly overseas is hugely popular.
Yes, I think possibly from England, it's so much easier for people from England to go to the continent, to go over to Europe. It's much easier than it is for us to go over to Europe, because they're kind of on the doorstep down in the south, certainly.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe they had spent so much time on staycations in Scotland, there's a little bit of backlash from that. Yeah, but lots of Scottish domiciled tourists spending their cash. But North America, particularly the United States, has really driven the recovery of international tourism in Scotland.
Yes. And of course, you were talking about the recovery of tourism, but that is really the recovery of Scotland as well, because tourism is such a major thing in Scotland and its economy that it's very, very important that it is successful.
Yeah, because it's not just the tourist industries, it's the general economy. You know, it spreads throughout the economy.
Uh-huh.
And in 2022, the international tourists were spending 67% more than they had in 2019. I think a part of that is because the pound is so weak.
Yes.
So they're taking advantage of the fact that the exchange rate is so favourable.
Yes, and also I think, again, I've noticed going around Scotland that we now have got much better quality goods in the shops for sale, much more,
yeah.
Many more Scottish-made goods,
yeah.
Authentic, are in the shops and not overly expensive. So I'm always directing my guests to these places where they can get real things,
yeah.
Made by real people.
Yeah, but I think the creative industries in Scotland are so important.
Yeah.
And, you know, arts and crafts really expanding, as you say, and finding,
yeah.
Its way into the shops. And, you know, that's what tourists are looking for. They're not looking, yeah. For tourist tat in general, although that does go down a bomb as well. But they are becoming more discerning.
And these local craftspeople are supporting each other and giving themselves platforms. You know, there's the Makers Market on in the old Tronkirk in Edinburgh,
uh-huh.
Where they have stalls, and then that wonderful shop in George Street, which was the Anta shop, is now just full of made in Scotland beautiful crafts in there, from jewellery to placemats to jumpers to whatever. Just fantastic. There are craftspeople sitting in their own houses throughout Scotland making beautiful and original things.
And I suppose they found their market originally through farmers' markets, whatever. Now,
yes.
They're coming together,
yes.
As cooperatives to sell it. But looking at where our visitors come from, the top, we've said that the United States leads the way. And then it's Europe, it's Germany, France and the Netherlands. But if you think back to 2019 and how tourism has changed, I think over the last couple of years, sort of 22 and 23 with the recovery of it, we've seen far fewer Chinese visitors,
yeah.
Than we had before. But China has just included the United Kingdom on the batch of countries that have approved destination status. And we're beginning to see more Chinese, particularly because the number of Chinese students studying in our universities is so strong. So their, mm-hmm. families are coming across on visits.
Yes, and I think that's important. And of course, I love watching the Chinese or people from Asia taking photographs, because I look at them and see what they're doing and think, oh, that's a really nice photograph. I'll take that. They do see things, but they see it through the lens rather than through their eye. But they do spot things for good photographs.
Yeah, I can just imagine you standing posing. You know, you see some of these very much posed.
Or jumping in the air.
Exactly. I can just see you in that heaven.
With my selfie stick.
Yeah. So if we've got all these international tourists coming in, maybe Visit Scotland are doing a good job of getting us onto these world's best lists, so that, you know, these travellers are coming to find these places. One thing that I must mention, I mean, India doesn't come onto our list of the, you know, a major destination for our tourists. But if you've ever been at the top of the gondola on the Nevis Range, where you can walk to the viewpoint,
yes.
I'm sure that there is some kind of temple at the summit of that, because the number of Indian visitors in Glencoe around the Fort William area, but particularly up on that gondola on the Nevis Range, you know, they're up there hiking up to the viewpoint in saris and sandals and whatever.
I was going
to
say, they don't even wear the right clothes. Yes.
What is it about that area that is just so popular with Indian tourists? If anybody knows the answer to that, answers,
yes.
On a postcard, please.
Yes, that's right. No, it's amazing the number of people, and I love it. And listening to the babble of different languages as you're walking around some of these busy tourist places.
Yeah. So, you know, what influences people's decisions to come to Scotland? Well, obviously, Outlander.
Yes, Outlander is a big one, and still is a big one. And there's practically not a place in Scotland that hasn't got some sort of link with Outlander.
Or found it, no matter how tenuous. You know,
exactly,
if you find that link. But the official statistics would tell us that particularly for European travellers, it's recommendations from friends and family. So I think people come, have a good time in Scotland, go back home, tell friends and family about it, and then, you know, come back on repeat visits.
And I think what I often say to my people, that people in Scotland, you know, the Scots, we just love people. We're not too worried about who they are, what rank they hold or anything. We just love people. So we're very friendly with everybody, you know, and want to show off our wonderful country. We don't have any snobbery in Scotland that we say, oh, I'm not going to speak to you or whatever. Yeah. We just love our country and we love showing it off. Yeah. And we love you as people coming to Scotland.
That is absolutely true, Helen. That's what I find time and time again as I'm going around. We're very sociable. We're very welcoming. But there was a story on the Oban Information Facebook page, which I thought just typifies exactly what you're saying. It was two, I think it was Chinese, I'm not sure. There were the young female tourists who were travelling and they didn't know where the bus stop was. They'd got mixed up with the bus stop in Oban. And as they arrived at the bus stop, they just saw their bus to Glasgow leaving. So they were in a panic, you know, how were they going to get back to Glasgow? And they asked a taxi driver if he could catch the bus up. And he said, of course, get in. So of course, the usual chase, you know, the taxi driver was chasing the bus to get ahead of it so that they could get onto the bus. And when they got out ahead of the bus after they'd overtaken it, he refused to take any payment. He just said, no, that's us looking after you. You're fine. On you go, catch your bus. And I just thought that sums up.
It does. That's a lovely story.
A lovely story.
And of course, the taxi driver would love the chase.
Yeah.
he will have pints bought for him for a long time in the pubs of Oban as he recounts the story of the chase.
Well, everybody was on the hunt for who this taxi driver was. So they identified who it was. So I'm sure, as you say, Helen, it would be all right. He was the hero of Oban. He had put Oban on the map. So he would be living off that.
Oh, that's a great story.
So talking about the Scots psyche, their favourite word of the Scot is free. So it's not surprising that when it comes to the most popular tourist destinations in Scotland or tourist attractions in Scotland, the most popular ones are those that are free. The National Museum of Scotland, the National Galleries of Scotland, Kelvin Grove,
and all of these things. And people are still astounded when you say they're all free. Mm-hmm. You know, the things that are run by the local authorities are free. They quite often have a donations pot there, inviting donations, but they are free to go into, and it's up to you whether you want to leave a donation if you feel it's been worth it. It was interesting, I went to the Deer Centre just along the road here last weekend, and it is free in inverted commas. In other words, they say, here are the charges, a bit like the Highland Folk Museum, here are the charges that costs us, but you pay what you feel is correct for you, so that families can go and go around and have a wonderful experience. And you, okay, they'll put a small donation in, but they're not having to pay up to £50-60 for a day out for the family.
You're bringing back horrible memories here, Helen. You're stirring us up. Remember when the kids were at school, nursery? I remember going on a nursery trip to that Deer Centre and it was pouring rain. And so the kids got put into one of the sheds to eat their packed lunches. But unfortunately, all the deer had been given birth in the sheds before we'd arrived. So we were skiting all over the place. So that's my word for today, because I just realised I haven't got one. So skiting, we were slithering and slipping all over.
But it was actually going under the Deer Centre, but two local businessmen bought it because they remembered the wonderful times that they had as children, and they've done fantastic work there. Good. And they've also bought over the Muddy Boots. Don't know whether you remember Muddy Boots, which was a place that children went to locally.
No, don't remember that.
The farmer's given that up, but the Muddy Boots have moved into the Deer Centre. So it was awash with children. Talking about staycations, it was the school holidays.
Uh-huh.
So the car park was full, the overflow car park was full, the overflow car park was full, but there's so much space, everybody just spread out. It was very good, a great experience.
So a good example of tourism booming.
Yes,
and I was telling you that I've just been to visit the new Scottish galleries of the National Galleries of Scotland, and they are fantastic.
Desperate to go back again. Yes.
Absolutely brilliant. Just been refurbished and reopened. So again, free, donations and, only.
Yeah, and the other thing that I noticed, I don't know whether you noticed, Liz, but our new honorary president for the STGA, the Scottish Tourist Guide Association, is the lady who is the high hegemon, if you like, of the Great Tapestry of Scotland down in Galashiels, which is a wonderful visit. Anybody who wants the story of Scotland in a nutshell on tapestry, the Great Tapestry of Scotland in Galashiels is a fantastic visit. Not free, but not overly expensive.
Yep. And of course, another one that's very, very popular, Gretna Green and the Blacksmith's Shop. You know, we tend to, one of the areas of Scotland that's overlooked, the Scottish border, and be some Galloway. And, you know, they, one of the things that is now, you know, becoming very prevalent in the tourism industry is local marketing initiatives, you know, not just Visit Scotland, but, you know, the famous one would be the North Coast 500, which brought that area of the Highlands of Scotland to the fore. But now, particularly down in the borders in Dumfries and Galloway, you've got this, got the South of Scotland Destination Alliance, and their slogan is Scotland Starts Here, to try and stop people just heading up from England and going right through the borders to get up to Edinburgh and Glasgow and the Highlands, actually to capitalise on things like Gretna Green and the beautiful coastline that you've got down at Dumfries and Galloway.
Yes, and also you're seeing Scotland, which is, you know, for the trees, sometimes in the busier places, you can't see what you're looking at because there's so many people. But down there still, you can actually see the beauty of it, the unspoilt beauty of it. So yes, I think that's something that really has got to be moved away. People don't just rush to Edinburgh Castle. Look at other things on the way.
Yep, and you know, we're getting on those best lists. Lonely Planet named Scottish Borders as one of their best places in the world to visit. And of course, the local economy is trying to build on that. They've got a lot of cultural events on, but they've got a lot of festivals, you know, through the year, community events. So they're trying to grow these little local community events that have gone on for centuries, and to make more of them in terms of, you know, attracting tourists to them rather than just the locals.
That's right. Well, I was watching a programme talking about world's best lists. It's a series that's been on television about the best hotels around beyond the lobby, the best hotels around the world. And one of the hotels that they featured was in Scotland, down in that area we're talking about, Glenapp, just on the southwest coast of Scotland. And I watched it with my mouth wide open. That is on my bucket list, Liz. I need to get lots and lots of tours next year to pay for it. But they have gone into the business very much as we are offering an experience, going back to what we were talking about. It's not just come and stay in our beautiful hotel and enjoy our wonderful food and our woodland walks, but they have gone out locally to see what there is locally that they can include in the experiences, including things like sea safaris, where they went out to see the orcas and the seals. But then they went to a glamping site that the hotel had put up on a only accessible by sea on Jura. And it was, they had the same luxury, staying under canvas, but the same luxury as they had in the hotel. And the chef produced the unbelievable meal for them. So that's on my bucket list, Liz.
Absolutely. But you know, closing off, it's, to grow the tourism industry in Scotland isn't without challenges. We've talked about trying to make the tourism industry sustainable and green. And to do that, we've really got to look at the infrastructure that we're providing. You'll know that recently we've had debate on the Tourist Guide's website about toilets in Edinburgh. We can't get public conveniences.
No. And, you know, and also when you go around, it's quite difficult explaining to your guests on coach, we're stopping here at the public toilets, but you all need 50 pence.
Yeah. I don't mind paying that.
If it's clean and well looked after, I don't mind paying the 50 pence.
We need to go back to the days of an attendant, where you've got an attendant, you've got lovely toilets with fresh flowers and, you know, clean.
The one at Dunkeld is always clean.
Of course.
And the attendant's there, you've put your 50 pence across and you go into a nice fresh smelling toilet.
Absolutely, but it's not just the toilet. I mean, it's the people along the communities of the North Coast 500 know. It's also about, you know, the rural areas are really struggling to cope with that number of tourists, their camper vans, their dirty camping. I mean, the famous one in Scotland that everybody knows about, the fairy pools, you know, where if you visit the fairy pools at the height of the season, it's just one long trek. You know, there's nothing enjoyable about following hundreds of other people up a path to see it. What we've got to do is to put in proper parking facilities, you know, to take people from designated drop-off points, to take them there. You know, just find a way of dispersing visitors from these hotspots to share it more widely amongst the communities.
Yes, and also managing the numbers.
Yeah.
Yes, because the numbers are huge. And Edinburgh Castle, to be fair, since they started managing the numbers, it's not quite as you crowded and find a cobble to place your foot that nobody else is on. It's much more managed than it was pre-COVID.
Of course, one of the other challenges that the islands have had this year, which is not just about tourism, it's much wider than that, but the ferries. I mean, we've had the scandal of the ferries being over time and over budget, but you know, whole economies are being destroyed by the unreliability of the ferry service.
Yes, and talking of the islands, Liz, I did my swim on Iona, my last visit to Iona. I took my cosy with me and I went to the beach and I had a swim, well, more like a whale floundering in the shallows, but I had a swim in the water, and then coming out of the water was a bit like Mr. Bean getting dressed under the towel, elbows everywhere. So
I have to hasten to say that on the day that Helen was in the water on Iona, you'd have thought it was the Caribbean. It was at one of the hottest days. I was there the next week where the wind was blowing a hoolie, and you would certainly not have been in on that day. No, so Iona is two places according
two
to
places,
which
exactly
way the wind is blowing.
Yeah, but I had to have a swim.
So yeah, we're moving to sustainable, slow tourism, environmentally aware tourism. You know, a lot of tourism will be based in the future on the biodiversity of Scotland and its beautiful natural environments. So you know, climate change, a major challenge moving forward. And Scotland's got ambitious targets on that. Keep Scotland unspoiled. And of course, one of the more controversial, the tourist taxes, which a number of places are talking about.
Yes, because that bill went before Parliament, didn't it, in May of this year?
Yep.
To see whether or not, but
plans for Edinburgh to introduce a tourist tax.
Yes.
Also beginning to license holiday lets to control the number of properties that are being bought up as short-term lets.
Also the quality, Liz, because there've been horror stories of people arriving and finding, you know, their money's been taken, but there's not an awful lot for it at the end of the road. So I think it's something that's got definitely to be looked at, and I'm pleased it is being looked at.
Yep. And I think people agree that as long as the money is invested back into the tourism industry,
exactly,
car parks, mm-hmm, toilets, all that we've talked about, then, you know, it's something that really has to come.
To enhance the experience.
So much, you know, so many attractions from Hieland Coos to Kelpies, you know, that it's all there. We've not even touched on a lot of the experiences we mentioned before, Glasgow and the UNESCO City of Music and all that goes on there with Celtic connections. And you talked about the World Pipe Band Championships. Banksy, that was on this year.
Oh, and that had to open virtually 24 hours a day because I had guests who had their time of visit something like 1:15 in the morning.
Yeah.
It was opened right through the night to accommodate the numbers at wanting to see it.
Yeah, and I think that they're learning from it that, you know, they've had the whiskey trail, the food and drink trails, the murals trail in Glasgow.
Yes.
Now they've moved on to coffee trails, and the next one that's coming up is a beer trail, which is going around the local beer community, not just the great big huge tenants brewery, but also the craft brewers. So they're taking tourists around the local communities, drinking with locals. So, you know, people are getting very sophisticated in how they're going about.
But it's also expanding and spreading the numbers over much greater, wider areas and wider facilities. I think this is great.
So maybe this is one to return to. We haven't talked about how tourism developed in the first place with Sir Walter Scott and Queen Victoria. So I think maybe we've got more to look at in terms of what's happening in 2024 in Scotland.
Oh, that would be
tourism.
Good, yes, yeah. Yes. Maybe and also, Liz, we've got a bit of time in the next couple of months.
Absolutely.
We could actually do some recordings.
And maybe we learn to plan ahead and maybe get some in plan, as we say.
That's a bridge too far, Liz, planning ahead.
We look at our friends like Radio Leaven and Spanish Loops. You know, Spanish Loops have gone from strength to strength. They had hundreds in the can, so they're working really hard on their tours, but they're still getting the episodes out there. We need to learn. We need to get better, Helen.
We need to do that. Well, that's a New Year resolution.
Absolutely.
Which is usually broken by the 2nd of January.
Yeah, we'll work hard at it. But it's good to be back. We hope that we've still got some people out there that might come back and listen to us again. I'll have a look at the figures and see what the figures are like. But thank you for those that do come back and have taken the time to listen to this. Please post and let us know that you're out there and that you're give us topics. You'll give us ideas for what you would like to see covered. Do you want to hear more about what's happening in Scotland in 2024? We are led by you, so give us some ideas and clues.
And Liz, what? Word of the week, you gave your
I've
one.
I've given mine, Skype. Yeah. what's yours, Helen?
Well, mine is Keek.
Oh, right.
And that's taking a hasty look at something.
Right.
But what we're urging you, just avoid taking just a Keek when you're visiting Scotland. It deserves a much longer look. So no Keeking, just stay and linger.
You've got to soak it up.
Sook it up and had your wheesht because it just silences you, the scenery. Yes.
Oh, we're back, Helen, we're back.
Oh, we're back, that's great.
Okay, well, nice to hear from you. Thanks a lot for Helen.
Okay, thank you, Liz. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
And there we have it, the end of another episode of Scottish Blethers. If you'd like to join us on social media, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram as @ScottishBlethers. And if you'd like to leave a review, please do so on your podcast platform of choice. It's cheery bye from me.
Ta-ta the moo from me.
And if I don't see you through the week, I'll see you through the windy from me.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.